Hey, citizens of the interweb, you have landed on A Shot and a Beer, a weekly interview podcast featuring chefs, brewers, troublemakers, and heartbreakers. Every week, we're talking food and booze with people who do it for a living. So grab a beer, pour yourself a shot, and come along for the ride. Okay, kids, we're back. Shot and a beer one more time. We are sitting today, had a last-minute cancellation, and was able to pick up a super guest at the very last minute, Miss Allison Gill. How are you, Allison?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. And with me, as always, is Maddie. How are you, sir?
Oh, Captain, my Captain. How are you?
I'm great. And we brought on a baby.
All right, that's creepy.
Well, our other guest today is a guy who is distinctive in that he's probably 6 months younger than the wallet I currently carry. You're just 21 now, aren't you, Rob?
Yep.
Wow. Rob Bronson, who is a server and a comedian. And actually, we have two comedians today, which ought to make for a very good episode.
I'm excited.
And if it sucks, I'll blame you. As we always do on this show, why don't we start with Rob? But tell us a little bio. What got you to this point of your life? Where do you work, by the way?
I work in an Italian restaurant. You know, real old school, green vinyl, all that fun stuff.
Wait, is it actually in Little Italy?
Oh yeah.
You aren't allowed to say the name of the place. Unless you don't want to.
I prefer not to, but thank you.
Okay. How long have you been working there?
Since December, so almost 6 months now.
Okay. Have you always just done food and beverage jobs?
Oh, no. I've done every shit job you can imagine. Security guard, janitor, and restaurants, yeah.
You have an extensive collection of name tags and hairnets?
What's your job currently at the restaurant?
I cover the busboys, and I am a host.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
You know, it's everybody looks at those as the very beginning positions in restaurants, but unless you have that shit together, it's a crippling loss when you lose good hosts or you lose a good busboy, because it can completely ruin the whole experience for a guest.
That's why they don't get promoted.
Yeah, that's pretty well true.
Absolutely.
A lot of times they, and it's really kind of unfair sometimes, because we stick young people like Rob. But I've worked at places where our hosts were girls that were in high school, and they basically control the entire ebb and flow of the restaurant depending on, you know, how they seat people, when they seat people, and all that.
So is it typically the host makes the decisions to who gets seated in what certain section? Is there politics involved with that, with, like, the servers? And
yes.
There's a lot of politics with that?
Oh, and the servers are miserable, because you're never ever going to do it right. You double-sat me. You're not seating me fast enough. Why are they getting all the tables? How come all the tables in my section are shitty?
Interesting. Yeah. So I have an advantage. So I do the seating here at the Madhouse as the door guy, but that isn't, it's very different than a restaurant host, I would imagine, because my seating is based on how they should be seated to make a good comedy show. Not
right.
Necessarily, I'm not thinking about, oh, this server has 13 tables.
You're looking for concentration of guests in a relatively small space. Mm-hmm. Rob's got to worry about people. You know, did I double seat this person? How many people are in their section? Is this party of 10 going to take up all their time? Stuff like that. And it can be really tough. It's a thankless goddamn job.
Sounds like it.
I used to hate having to, even as being a front of the house manager, used to hate having to hang out at the host stand.
A good server makes friends with the host and tips them fat.
Yep.
So you get seated well and
grease the wheel a little bit.
Plus, I mean, like you were saying, rarely get promotion opportunities, because if you get a good host, you leave them in host. But if you do that as a manager, you run the risk of high turnover and the cost of having to retrain people. So you really should promote from within, from the hosts. I mean,
yeah, you really should. And a lot of hosts, some of the best servers are people that come from the host stand, because they know how the system works.
Right. And if you can't find a good new host, you suck as a manager.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Allison, we were talking a little bit off air. You actually paid your way through college in the food and beverage industry, didn't you?
My first degree. Yeah.
You have 2 degrees?
I have 3.
You have 3 degrees,
don't you?
Yeah, I have a bachelor's, a master's, and a finishing PhD. Military paid for the master's.
Holy crap.
I paid for part of the bachelor's.
You are probably our most
educated
guest.
Money waster guest.
Well, you have very impressive credentials.
Eternal student guest. How far are you along with your PhD program?
I'm done with that. I'm just doing the dissertation now.
Oh, when do you defend?
Just submitted the proposal for quality review, so I don't have final approval yet.
Mm-hmm.
Probably another 2 or 3 months before I defend.
Oh, wow. What's your doctorate going to be in?
Oh, it's really exciting. It's about veterans missing appointments, why they miss appointments, and how to mitigate that, because it's a huge cost.
I can imagine.
To the taxpayers.
And for those of you who didn't pick up on that, Allison actually works for the VA, right?
Now, currently, yes. Yeah. I work for the VA.
But tell us a little bit about when did you start working food and beverage?
Oh, the late 80s. I started at, my first job was a graveyard shift, Denny's in the middle of nowhere, off of Highway 40.
Oh, my God.
The old Highway 66 in Flagstaff. So it was completely quiet at night. We made $2.13 an hour, which I don't think has gone up much, unless you are in California, you make minimum wage.
Yeah.
But you also have to face the fact that it's a right-to-work state and you could be fired at any time.
Mm-hmm.
So we made a little over $2 an hour, and it was completely and totally a ghost town, except every once in a while, like, we had Kenny Rogers tour bus stop in, and we had 30 people all at once.
Did he recommend you should start serving some rotisserie chicken?
I was trying to figure out why they stopped at Denny's, but, you know, it's the only restaurant out there for miles, so.
The late night, those 24-hour places, my son, who's a cook in Denver right now, started out at the Awful Waffle. He was a Waffle House cook, and he was like, boy, the 2 in the morning crowd is a rough one. Everybody comes in, they're all hammered, they're all loud, they don't know what they want to eat. Waffle House, if you ever spend any time down south, and I know you did.
Oh, absolutely.
It's bedlam at 2 in the morning.
It really can be.
Yeah. Well, after my after I moved out to San Diego, I took a graveyard shift at the Denny's in PB, probably 95, 96. After I got out of the military, and that was a nut house. You could smoke back then, and I had the patio. I had 12 four tops.
Mm-hmm.
But the great thing about serving smokers is that you can bring them their food when you're goddamn good and ready to bring them their food.
Yeah, whenever, because they have something else to do.
Anywhere.
Yeah, and they're all pretty housed, so you can kind of be a dick to them, you know.
I can't imagine the Denny's in PB. Oh, my God.
It wasn't as douchey back then.
It really is anymore.
Denny's.
Both. PB. Denny's has never been douchey. You don't really get, like...
Well, that's true.
It's not like when I worked at the Ivy or at the Hard Rock Hotel. That's douche central. I mean, when you have a hotel with bars that you have to build holding cells into because you know there's going to be douchebags...
Wait, Hard Rock... Is that the Hard Rock has...
Hard Rock Hotel has holding cells. Most good clubs downtown do. When
I
say
no
good,
idea.
You know, good is...
I've heard of stadiums having holding cells, but a hard, wow, that's, hey, can we get that here at the Madhouse? That'd
cell.
Be really good, like.
Yeah, the best part was when I was working security for the Hard Rock for a little while, and we had the MMA conference come in.
Oh, that
And I'm like,
all
right, security, and because most of our security guys are MMA washouts, right?
Right.
So we're like, all right, what's the plan? I'm like, you know what, I don't know. Like, if a fight breaks out at the MMA, conference, what are we going to do?
You just stand back. Wait till there's one guy standing and then arrest him.
So we were pretty scared. But honestly, they were the most well-behaved.
Were they really?
Yeah, they were.
Well, they were all training, so they weren't, you know.
Or they knew they might want a security job later.
What'd you do at the Hard Rock? I mean, apart from security.
Well, the first thing I did for them was set up their call center, which I called ground control.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's the Hard Rock. Then I did, I kind of was a jack of all trades. I filled in anywhere they needed me because we were there for the launch. And that was the same with the Ivy. So mm-hmm. I did some housekeeping. I did some business sales. I did the communications, ground control.
Right.
Security when they needed it. Serving in some of the different, you know, restaurant areas. It's pretty much when you work in a hotel, you got to be able to.
You end up doing it all.
Especially if you're graveyard.
Yeah.
But, man, those are fun nights, wandering up in the suites. I think room 1201, I think it was. It's like a $6,000 a night or something. Got, like, stripper poles and king bunk beds. Just insanity.
I saw when they first opened, there was a bed that was, like, suspended from chains
mm-hmm.
on the ceiling. So it was like you could actually swing. You could swing the bed.
That's the one. And mirrors up in the top.
See, I wouldn't want a mirror above my bed. That would
what, wake up and see yourself and
freak
out.
No, I do not want that shock when I wake up in the morning. It's bad enough just in the bathroom.
It's not what it's for, but
no, I get it. No, I understand. I also don't want
my favorite was like they had like the 8-person shower. You know, you're like, all right. But we in the middle of the night nobody's staying there on like a Tuesday. We would just go up there and hang out.
Hang out in the fuck room.
Yeah, hang out in the fuck room. Practice on the stripper pole. One had a stripper pole.
Did you ever take a black light into one of the rooms just to see?
Hell no. Oh. No, thank you.
That freaks me out every time they do that on TV.
Right.
Ugh.
Better to not know.
But you've had a really interesting life.
Yeah.
You
pretty weird.
You were a Marine, correct? No, you're in the Navy.
Yes, correct.
We had that discussion one night, but I was having a bag, so I'm. Forgive the mistake. What'd you do in the Navy?
Nuclear reactor engineer, mechanic.
Jesus.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I'm one of those people where if I'm presented with an opportunity in life, I take it. Except for having kids, I didn't do that one. But I'm a
Good
you know
call.
If you have yeah if you have it because that's going to prevent a lot of other things from
yeah.
happening.
Right.
But if you have a if I have a decision in front of me of whether to do something or not do something, I tend to do it.
Wow. I'm really glad you were free today. I had no idea that you had done all of that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's me.
And then also you have this whole other music background as well, like in the music scene, and you were...
Right, that's how I got into comedy. It was an accident.
Really?
Because I was hosting the open mic, best open mic in San Diego, at the Barney Stone Pub for 6 years. 2003 to 2009, Dallas McLaughlin took it over.
Right. That's the one that's downtown. That
Nope. Blarney Stone and Claremont.
Oh, the Claremont one.
Yeah. Strip okay. Mall. Fantastic.
They still run a mix mic there, from my understanding.
I don't know. I haven't been back in a while. But I was a musician hosting an open mic there.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember being at a concert one night. I was at the Flaming Lips and Liz Phair was opening. Right, and
it's a great show.
Yeah, and everybody's milling around getting drinks, and Liz Phair's on stage, and nobody's paying attention to Liz Phair because they're all waiting for the Flaming Lips until she starts singing a song called "Hot White Cum," and then everybody stops what they're doing and they turn around and they're like, "What did she? Eh?" And
it's
I was,
those, did she just? She didn't say that.
She did.
No.
And what I took from that was I need to write songs about semen and sex and vaginas and. Things.
Blowjobs and all
that. Blowjobs, drinking, stuff like that. So
attention getting.
Yeah. So I was like, that's the key to get them to pay attention to you. So I wrote one song and then I wrote another. And actually, it was so offensive, I thought. I didn't play it for months after I wrote it. And so I was up on stage. I'd play them and then I'd start playing them more and then would tell stories in between. And then comedians started coming to the mic. Because it was touted as, like, the hardest open mic in San Diego. And
right.
If you could complete a set at the Blarney Stone without getting a bottle flung at your face, you were doing okay.
And this is a period of time where, like, there weren't as many mics in San Diego, comedy mics in San Diego, where people were really struggling to try and.
Correct.
What's
yeah.
the time frame on this?
2003, 2006, mm. or 2009 is when I ended it for myself when Dallas took over. But Ryan Mervis was there one night, and I met him working at the Hard Rock mm-hmm. Hotel. He's a comedian now, works at the Comedy Store in Hollywood. And he heard me, and he's like, hey, I got a show at the Comedy Store in La Jolla this weekend. You want to be on it? And I was like, I'm not a comedian.
He's right.
Like, he was like, yeah, yeah, you are. And I was like, oh, shit.
And that's when shit got real.
November 9th, 2012. No, 2009. November 9th, 2009. And I did that show, and then I was like, man, this is great. Everyone shuts up, and they're sitting, and they're listening, and right. I don't have to, you know. Because when you're a musician at a bar or whatever, they sing along if you're doing Sweet Caroline, but otherwise I could give a fuck less.
Right.
I was like, this is the way to go. So that's how I started in comedy. And I didn't know this, but I already had a lot of enemies right off the bat because I just walked right into a weekend show at the Comedy Store.
Oh, I'm sure that did. With yeah, a guitar.
I kind of hate you right now. Actually.
They're like, who the fuck is it? But what was funny, it was like 5-minute set, and I'm all, this is it. It's my big break, you know? And you get those moments in your comedy career. Like when I got, in 2012, I did the Hollywood Improv on a Friday night, 10 o'clock mm-hmm. show. And I'm like, this is it. This is my big break, you know. And then you get a commercial for, I don't know, fuck all, Tide or something. You're like, this is it. Like, it happens. Like, every couple of years, you get a big break, and then you end up, you know.
My first ever time on stage in San Diego was at the Comedy Store. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I never been on stage. I'm playing the Comedy Store on a Tuesday at a Bringer show. And it's not until you actually spend a little time in comedy to realize how absolutely shitty that is.
Yeah, but before you're there, it's a big goddamn
like,
deal.
Hey, man, I took pictures. Yeah. I am at the Comedy Store.
Invited your mom, right.
Same stage as your prior performed on.
Yeah, world famous, you guys. This is broken down.
And oddly enough, prior did not drop in.
No.
Not on a Tuesday, on a Bringer show.
In La Jolla.
In La Jolla. Especially since he was dead.
Right. Well. But
Rob, what was the first time you got on stage as a comic?
Probably not too long ago, like 6 months ago.
6 months.
Was
it here at the Madhouse?
Oh, you were only 6 months in?
Yeah.
Wow.
Was it here at the Madhouse was the first
oh,
one?
Yeah. Oh,
I
yeah.
I remember you showed up a solid 2 weeks and watched the mic.
Oh, yeah. I was
before you
it
took
out.
Up on... Before you actually got up on stage.
That happens fairly often, doesn't it? People come in and just see what it's all about, or do people dive
Not in my point of view. I see people come in and they're just oozing confidence, you know. And they'll go up not even, at least when I'd never seen them before.
Mm-hmm.
Me, I'm. What got me into comedy was, you know, depression. I wish I had the same story as Allison where I did radioactive
Well, shit,
material.
Everybody wishes they had the same right. story as Allison. I have done basically nothing with my life, apparently.
No, don't get me wrong. It was PTSD that drove me to...
Was it really?
To comedy. I mean, without it...
Were you in during a war?
No. Long story for maybe another time, but military sexual trauma. So... I was in the Invisible War, Oscar-nominated documentary about it. But that was a hard time, and I'm with you on that. I don't understand a lot of the bravado that you're talking about for first-timers going up that you see. I feel like maybe they haven't been through the shit. But maybe they're acting, too. I don't know.
So that's what I find. A lot of times they're acting, because as soon as they hit that stage and that first thing they think is a joke doesn't land... And they get that cold, open mic silence,
like
and it's just
like a sandcastle
done. And then they realize they're standing up there in shorts,
in front of a bunch of comedians that refuse to fucking laugh,
or at least going to be highly critical. And it better be a really funny joke for them to laugh.
I was telling that I had friends in town recently, and I was telling them about going up and doing the open mic at the LA store, like you were saying, and he's like, well, how do you get booked? I was like, well, there's an approval process where it's called you getting passed. And you're trying to get passed in front of a room full of people who are trying to do the exact same thing you are and wouldn't laugh if you were throwing $100 bills at them.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, well, that sucks. I was like, yeah, that's comedy.
That's pretty much how it works.
Well, it's tough, too, when you're, you know, from a comedian's perspective, we've seen 1,000 sets.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know about you guys, but it takes a lot to make me laugh or get my attention. Honestly, it's not because I'm trying to be a dickhead. It's just I've seen so much comedy mm-hmm. that, like, I remember I went to Phoenix and I went to see a friend of mine, Jill Kimmel, Jimmy Kimmel's sister. She's mm-hmm. super funny. And I went to the show as a patron,
mm-hmm.
and we got seated at a table, and I had to watch comedy from the audience, and it was sucked. I couldn't tell. Like, I was like, oh, like, I feel like just a regular person. This isn't, it was just weird. It was odd. But I think it's a combo of them refusing to laugh,
mm-hmm.
and then a combo of I've seen so much comedy that it's going to be like a Tamer Katan or something that's going to...
Right, a genius.
Yeah.
That I'm going to have to, you know, that I'm going to pay attention to. But I do have my favorites, and there are comedians I will watch no matter what.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
The real paradox is, ultimately, the goal is you're not trying to make comedians laugh. And there's a very different comedy sensibility between open micers and comedians and real people. And if you go up...
Real people.
Yeah.
And if you go up, I see it a lot, like people that do very, very well in rooms that are filled with comedians, and they're like the most popular comic in LA, but down here at the Madhouse in front of an audience of 30, 35 regular San Diegans.
I love comedians.
I love comedians, comedians too.
Gene DeBruler comes to mind.
Mm-hmm.
That guy, every comedian in the house will just be dying. Right. And everyone else is all, did he just poop a Snickers into a cup? Like you, and we're dying. So I love those guys. But I'm interested what you were saying, Rob, about getting into it because of depression. You were depressed. What can you talk more about that? I want to know.
Yeah.
Because
we all share that, I think.
I don't.
Well, all the good comedians. No, I'm sorry. Shot.
Oh, are we at 20? Oh, we are. I got lost in the conversation. We're past the 20-minute mark.
Oh, spectacular.
Oh, wow. That.
Cheers, guys. Thank you for being on. Thank you for being on the show and making this the successful podcast that it is.
There we go.
Smooth. Good one, Maddie.
Clears the vocal cords.
So what was going on in your life that kind of made you want to work it out on stage?
You know, before just growing up, I always, you know, like stand-up comedy. By 8th, 9th grade, I've seen probably 3 Bill Hicks specials.
Yeah.
A few George Carlin's later stuff.
Bill Hicks is pretty advanced stuff for someone that age.
Yeah, like I said, I was depressed, and so I could relate to that. But I didn't know that was an option.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you can be funny, you can like this shit, and you know, you can get a job being funny. I did not know that was possible.
Right.
You know, high school wasn't my thing. I didn't, you know, build nuclear reactors like...
Well, I didn't build them, but...
You repaired them.
Well, you damn near made me feel stupid when you said it.
No, most of the time we were fixing toilets adjacent to the nuclear reactors.
Nuclear toilets.
They run themselves. It's still the Navy. We're still dipshits.
But I got into, like, Muay Thai, which is Thai kickboxing, mm-hmm. for, I would say, a solid, like, almost 5 years. And, that shit's rough, too.
Did you have hopes of becoming a professional fighter?
Oh, yeah. I had a few amateur fights, but when it's hard to get a coach to want to coach an amateur because they don't get paid doing that shit. They lose money doing that
shit. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And it got to the point where, okay, this isn't like a family feeling anymore.
Right.
I can't teach classes to, you know, work out here for free.
Mm-hmm.
They want me to pay $60 a month. And I just got fired at the time. So I didn't even have enough money to do that. And so it...
And that was your major outlet at the time.
Oh, yeah. And I drove there. I didn't even have money to put in my car, not even register it.
Mm-hmm.
So I just sort of stayed in my bed for about 2 weeks until my mom said, you need to get your shit together.
Mm-hmm.
And open mics are free. So I would just sort of loiter around here until, you know, I started getting called out, which I had a few bits already.
Mm-hmm.
And I finally went on stage, and I did terrible. And
yeah, you're supposed to do terrible. Right.
Oh, no, there's people that nail it the first time they do it.
There are people that have very good sets the first time.
I don't believe it.
It's especially helpful. It's especially helpful if you have a song.
It's helpful if you have a song. It's also help. Here's the people that I...
And boobs.
I understand. Well, that also does help.
A lot of comedians are like, oh, it sucks being a woman. Oh, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, no, you know what is actually really beneficial is that the audience expects less from me. So if I'm as funny as the guys, they think I'm funnier. So I actually feel like I have an advantage.
I've seen...
Don't tell Amy Schumer.
I will say, you are, and this is going to sound horribly fucking sexist, but there aren't a lot of women that I've seen that consistently make me laugh.
There aren't a lot of dudes that you've seen that consistently make you laugh.
That's mm-hmm. true as well.
You just,
yeah, I mean, just there's right. not a lot of comedians that consistently you make me laugh.
The numbers game is there's a shitload more men.
Exactly.
In it.
Oh,
yeah.
It
strikes me
anytime, far and away.
Even when I go like up to LA to the mics up there, I'm always struck by like, oh, this is the heart of comedy, and how few the percentages are of women to men, even on like the all the way from the open mic to people who are getting booked on local shows and stuff.
And to be fair, I think there are fewer women trying, but. I mean, there are sexist aspects of it. Don't get me wrong, sexist aspects of everything. But you know, it is what it is. It's like recently all the movie stars are striking, saying you know women need to be paid the same as men. But and now I'm going to sound extremely sexist. If the women don't command the same demand that the men do.
Yeah.
Is it because they're women and we have a systemic problem with everyone in the universe? That's probably closer to the fact that we just aren't hiring more women.
Right.
But, you know, if there's 100 dudes and 10 women and 10% of men are funny, that's 10 dudes, and 10% of women are funny, that's one lady. It's this, you know, so...
Right.
And of course, we can't really have that data. I don't think the government keeps charts on... on that shit.
Well,
No, they are. They just don't release it.
We had talked about that before on this show. I hate when referring to this as this show or this program. This program.
This program.
It's because you're on so many programs.
Well, you know, I am.
That you want to clarify that...
Howard Stern, look out, I am the king of all media.
It wasn't the, you know, the dildo hour show that you were on the other week.
Hey, that show was very big in
Dude,
Belgium.
Dildos are lucrative.
But, sure. No, we talked about that, talking about how you don't see a lot of female chefs getting huge publicity. And again, it's the same thing. It's a numbers game.
It's a law of averages.
Categorically, there are simply a lot more male chefs than there are female chefs.
Yeah, yeah. And so I think that it boils down to that.
Yeah.
So do you think that there's a specific aspect of stand-up that is attractive? Speaking in generalities, there's an aspect of stand-up that's more attractive to males than it is to females? Is that the reason why?
Yeah. Dude, chuckle fuckers, honestly. I think, I've been doing some amateur polling, men get laid a lot more readily after being on stage than women do. You do not want to fuck a lady that has a microphone.
Right.
You just...
She's funnier and
you're going to end up in the set.
Or a Taylor Swift song.
Maybe by name, you know. Mm-hmm. That's just how it is. In fact, I remember talking to a transgender man-to-woman comedian, and she was like, "Man, I used to get laid so much more." And I'm like, "Yeah, welcome to vagina and comedy. You're just not gonna. You're not here to."
You know, I have absolutely heard that from like A-list female comedians in interviews and all that. They're like, "It's really, really lonely on the road because you're not. You know, the guys can all hang out together and they can go get laid or go to the strip club or all that. And it's like, after the show's over, you're not hooking up with random dude.
Oh, and I'm a
who
big
saw you on stage.
And I'm a big downer at the Comedy Condo.
Are you really?
When they're like, oh, like four guys and I'm at the Comedy Condo too, they're like, ah, shit. Well. I'm like, I'll hold the video camera, fellas. I don't know what I was in the military. Like, I can't convince them that I'm, you know, down right. to party. it's hard.
But yeah, they've said that I think it was an interview with it might have been Amy Schumer or Eliza Schlesinger. They're like, a lot of women don't stay in comedy. They move on to being comedic actresses.
Yeah.
Because life that's on where the road, life on the road for a female.
I thought
you
were gonna say.
Just,
because that's where the dick is.
But they say life on the road is just really hard for female comedians.
It's also gross.
Mm. Is it?
Oh, yeah. Have you been to a comedy condo? Talk about blacklight.
Right. Ooh. I've heard stories. I've never gotten a chance to be at a comedy condo yet. It's a comedy goal. I've heard many
what,
stories.
What, to be at the comedy condo?
Yeah. I've heard
yeah, you're going to be like, this is my big break. This is it. And you're going to get into that fucking condo and be like, this is it? And trust me, it's not.
I've seen I Am Road Comics, so I kind of know what to expect. Like, oh, come in the ice cubes. All right. You're like, don't use the ice cubes and don't touch anything.
Come is the ice cubes.
Right.
There's the old, do you remember the Bob and Tom show?
Yes.
It's been on forever. But there is a parody song about John following John Fox, the comedian John Fox, at the comedy condo, and apparently he just lays waste, and you know, come in the ice tray, and there you find they say that after he's there, you find creepy shit for weeks.
Now see, I never heard of that guy, and you got to be a certain level of famous to fuck up a comedy condo,
right?
Yeah,
without getting in trouble.
These are also stories from, like, I imagine the 80s and 90s, but yeah. It was a little bit different.
Yeah.
Dude, I wish I was a comedian in the 80s, man.
I know.
That shit was so... And I don't want to, like, belittle my favorite 80s comedians. Like, you were talking about Carlin and Hicks.
Right.
I was like, that is so... It just seems like it's shooting fish in a barrel. It seems, like, so easy.
Right.
But I don't think we would have had the same... I don't know, repertoire or anything back then. I think
it just wasn't as advanced.
Well, back in the boom... Everybody talks about the comedy boom and how it all of a sudden there were like four great comedy clubs in the country, and then every fucking strip mall in the country
had
a comedian. And all the old school comedians are like, it was really bad for comedy because there wasn't enough quality comedy to stock all these new pawns. And it's like any, you know, your dentist is filling your teeth today, and you see him doing, you know, 15 minutes on a weekend at the comedy, at the Chuckle Factory in the strip mall, and it was like it took us a long time to get out of that rut.
That was also compounded by the fact of in the 80s the advent of cable and people watching HBO.
Yep.
And watching people doing their most amazing 15 minutes and then going to a comedy club and seeing somebody working out new stuff. Yeah. A little bit of comedy lesson. I don't know why I'm telling you guys this. I don't know. I went off on a little tangent.
Rob, how does comedy, is it infused in your job as a service industry person?
Because
I started comedy after I got out of service industry. So I'm interested to know how you bring it in. Do you incorporate it at all?
I'll practice riffing. If my goal is... Naturally, I don't like fucking talking to people. I don't like it. I don't enjoy it.
Is it because people are fuckfaces? Or?
I don't know what it is, but...
Yes, you heard it here first on Shot and a Beer. People are, in fact, fuck faces.
I just feel like there's this tension between me and, you know, the planet Earth.
You're a complicated young man, Rob. No. And I'm not saying that to mess with you. You're just a very complicated young man.
But, you know, my goal is every interaction I make with somebody, I want to make them smile. I want to make them laugh. That's my goal.
Yeah, I didn't even think about the job being a mic. It just occurred to me, like, you can try out your material on the job.
Mm-hmm.
I have fun with that, doing the door guy here.
You got to be careful with the dick jokes.
Yeah, I guess it depends on where you work.
Well, Rob, you talk about it. Your favorite comedian of all time is Patrice O'Neill, right?
Oh, yeah.
So there is, you're naturally attracted to the confrontational...
Oh, I love all the guys from Boston, yeah.
Right, that in-your-face, fuck you, but comics I'm still going to make home. You laugh. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, how do you feel about the whole... didn't recently Amy Schumer get accused of stealing Patrice O'Neill material?
Oh, yeah, I did see that.
You know, it was really... I've seen the transcripts of both. Did she steal it? I don't know.
Did her writer steal that?
Is it kind of hacky? Yeah. It's... I just think it's such a well-treaded path that I don't think... There wasn't anything really original about
it. But it wasn't a well-treaded path when Patrice O'Neill did it.
No, it wasn't. Oh, no. It wasn't, but, you know, those things that she was talking about on stage that she got accused of, you can see it on Facebook every day.
Right.
You know, it's not, he was probably the originator. We had this discussion last night about Jerry Seinfeld.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and it about how people, there's as many people who seemingly dislike Seinfeld as there are who are just fans of Seinfeld. And he's a, you know, what's the deal with airplane food or whatever?
He started that.
Yeah, I was going to say he was the originator.
That's like saying, well, that J.R. Tolkien with all the hobbits and elves and shit. We've all heard that
shit
before.
Yeah.
You know, like, he fucking started that shit. You got to give him that.
And that's what Dave and I were talking about that. It was like, you know, that purely observational comedian. Mm-hmm. He was it.
Right.
He was the guy.
After
and people
that, if you're
forget,
gonna have it.
People forget that he kind of created his own genre.
Right. The observational. If you're going to have an airplane joke, it better be the best airplane.
I
joke
like
in
Carlin's
the world.
Airline bit myself.
Carlin's airline bit is great. We were just talking about that.
Chunk, I should say.
Right.
It's got like 27 jokes in it. And that guy, he just memorized everything. If you ever saw more than one of his shows, you could memorize the tone and inflection of every single thing that he said. It was pretty incredible how he did that. It was almost like he was singing.
Right. It was verbatim. That's the reason why he hated hecklers so much and had to deal with hecklers so...
Oh, my God. I saw him. I saw him just absolutely destroy a heckler and just went straight to his most venomous, not even tolerate him a little bit because it threw off his rhythm.
Right.
Oof. But, you know, it's interesting to me. A lot of people get into the comedy game because they are the funniest person that somebody knows. And they go, you're so funny.
That's not a reason.
You ought to do stand-up.
The funniest people I know are the people who can't talk to people. Like you were saying, you have a problem with the planet Earth. I can talk at people, but... talking to them is a different story. Do you know what I'm saying? Like,
oh yeah.
That's kind of what I really connected with what you were saying is that it's a whole different world when you're talking at someone. You get off stage, everybody wants to come up and talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
I probably don't want to talk to you
at all.
Not because I hate you. It's just
I just don't want to talk to you.
I'm good being up here and talking at you, but I don't want to. I'm like,
find,
thanks, okay.
Do you find it's because, okay, if I'm honest, the reason why I don't like talking to a lot of people is because I don't really have anything to gain from talking to you. Like, small talk and minutia is not going to, I'm not going to walk away from that conversation like, oh, thank God I had that conversation.
It would touch you. I think it's because I don't have anything to contribute. I'm, you know, I'm like, oh, hey, what's up? Yeah, you. Thanks.
Yeah, but given your life experience, you probably have more to contribute than most of the people who are always fucking talking.
I got my close friends and people I care about to talk that to that, you know, talk about that stuff with. And, I, you know, again, I don't mean to belittle any audience or fans or anything. I am here specifically to make you happy.
Mm-hmm.
That is what I want to do. I care about you in that capacity. But beyond that...
But that's the beginning and the end of it.
I don't feel like we have anything else to talk about. If we connect on some dick joke level, yay. But, I mean, other than that, I don't want to sit in with you for 20 minutes and dig around to find out what we have in common so we can have a conversation.
That's right. Where I feel like comedy and restaurants intertwine. Because when you're talking to a customer, you're going to make them happy.
Yep.
No, if there's money at the end of it. But you really don't give a shit about this person in reality. Or at least on a small level. And that's just like stand-up, where you really aren't worried about these people's opinion, the audience's opinion about you, off the stage. But when you're on the stage, you want all these people to like you. At least subconsciously.
Yeah, is it for making them happy or because you get happy having made them laugh? And it's one of those situations where it's like, do I give to charity because I care about those people or do I give to charity because it makes me feel good?
Right.
I don't think it matters when it boils down to it. If you're making people laugh, who cares why? If you're doing something good for somebody, I don't have to tell you why I'm doing it.
It doesn't necessarily have to be an altruistic.
And I think he's right. I don't think it is all the time. I mean, being laughed at or with or making people laugh, I think has as much to do with what the comedian gets out of it as it does what you're doing for the audience.
Well, and it's having bridged both worlds. It's caring about touching on both your points. It's caring about the experience, not the individual having the experience.
There you go. Yeah, that makes sense.
You know, I if you're in my restaurant, I want you to have a good meal with good service, and I want you to leave happy. If I'm on stage, I want you to leave happy. I don't need to know you to want that to happen.
Right.
All right. All agree. Yes.
We've solved it all. All right. What other comics are you into?
Like that's who I was really into, like in high school, was like Bill Hicks, George Carlin. Patrice O'Neill was the one that made me want to do comedy and made me depressed about comedy, was the fact that will I ever just be as naturally funny as this man? And even Jerry Seinfeld has said that. Patrice just comes off so naturally funny.
Mm-hmm.
And Seinfeld had to work so hard and just grind it out on paper and write it out to be where he is today.
Do you ever see Zoltan?
Oh, yeah, I've seen Zoltan.
Yeah, fuck that guy. Dude, he is just always funny, and he doesn't even try. I'm just like, fuck you, dude. I love your face.
He could seriously do the alphabet. He could recite the alphabet and make the – because he would do that. A, B,
Even when he gets off stage and you're talking to him, you're just dying laughing. And there's a lot like that. But yeah, I know where you're coming from because you're like, I'll never fucking do that shit. I gotta craft my shit. You know, I gotta.
He's mastered the comedy speech and inflection.
I don't think
he's
mastered anything. I think he's just naturally that way.
He's just that good. Yeah.
Trey Stewart, I think, is like that too. There's a lot of guys
own
like that.
Hollywood Trey Stewart.
San Diego,
South Bay
Trey,
baby.
Via Portland or whatever.
Straight from Detroit.
But they
Detroit, sorry, Portland, Detroit, same thing, same Z's.
But the mechanism for everybody is just so different. I was watching the documentary 50 Years Behind the Wall about the improv.
Mm-hmm.
And they were talking about one of the comedians lived with Larry Miller for a while. And Larry Miller spends all day writing. And he's like, and then you get somebody like Adam Sandler, who just basically goes up and
picks up a ukulele.
Yeah, and makes a fart noise into the microphone, and everybody dies laughing. There are some people who just have that natural charisma, and for some people, you have to really work at it.
But you can still be great. Larry Miller mm-hmm. was great.
Oh, he is.
I think his Five Stages of Drinking is one of the most popular bits of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Carlin worked hard at it. I don't think Hicks worked hard at it. I think Hicks was just Hicks, and it was amazing. You can do it with music, too. The Beatles were accidentally geniuses. Mm-hmm. People write dissertations on the complexity of their chords. They were like, put my hand in this shape and make a thing. They didn't mean to be geniuses. They just were.
There are people who are just so far advanced that they almost can't help it.
Yeah, people have to practice 24/7, and they're amazing. So I think you can achieve it either way. But man, it'd be great to not have to work at it.
Just be naturally funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think we're all in agreement. We all hate Zoltan. We all love Zoltan, but we all hate Zoltan.
I think he makes me hate myself.
Did you hear that, Zoltan? You're making people hate themselves.
Oh, absolutely.
Good job. Good job, Zoltan.
Well, they all do. Anytime I see, like, Zoltan, Eric Myers, Taylor Tomlinson, you look at it and you go, I'm that, God damn it, fuck, I'm so far away. I'm so far away.
Ah.
There is a level of self-hatred that if you don't come into stand-up hating yourself, stand-up will make you hate yourself or make you realize how much you hate yourself.
Hmm.
That's what I feel. I feel like because I came to stand-up older, and started at 35, I thought I was a well-adjusted...
try starting it at 47.
Right. But I thought I was a well-adjusted dude who, like, you know, like, oh, I've gone through some of life. And then, like, what, the longer after just the first year of doing open mics and realizing, like, oh, you really, like, have some issues you need to work through. And you hate yourself. And... You know, you have...
I think you really got to hate yourself going in.
Really?
No. I mean, I get nothing but absolute joy from it, even if there's a bad night.
Oh, so you don't listen to your sets? No, because that's the reason I want to get a tape recorder. I don't want to record on my phone because I can't throw my phone against the fucking wall.
I've recorded... I video for the first 2 years. I videotaped every set. Just to make sure I wasn't...
See, that would be pure torture to me.
I wasn't doing anything weird.
Because I don't like watching any of my own sets.
Or fidgeting or anything like that. And a couple things. I learned a couple things from it. First of all, I don't drink before I go up. Unless it's the second show, I might have a drink.
Right.
Because if I go first on the first show and last on the second show, I'm going to have a drink.
Right.
But... There was a couple of things I was doing with my hands, fidgeting. I don't play the guitar. I don't have the guitar on me all the way through the set anymore. In fact, it's kind of relegated. Sometimes I don't even bring it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really useful. But yeah, it's hard to watch.
Right.
It is. It's hard to watch it.
You don't even realize. I find because I've started videoing my sets and realizing, like, why am I standing that way? Like, even, like, the posture that I'm taking.
And then you're like, do I do that in real life,
do
too?
Real
fuck
life
me
time?
In the face.
Wow. Yeah. No wonder why everybody calls me a faggot. All right.
I had a horrible problem, and to this day, with the cord. I watched an early set of mine, and it's like all I'm doing is I'm fucking around with the cord. Like, you know, like... Somebody throws a rope at a gorilla in the zoo and he's playing with it. I was like,
do you have detachment issues with your mother or anything?
Oh, maybe it's the umbilical cord.
That's what it is.
Let it go, man. Get a wireless.
I'm myself with it. I tend to pick it apart when I listen to it. I tend to pick it apart when I watch it. I can't imagine taping for 2 years. I would probably have quit.
Interesting.
You know, and sitting at this table, I think Rob probably has to simply be, and I know I bust your stones about being a kid, but you probably have to work a lot harder simply because all of us have been alive longer. You know, I naturally have done more things than you because I'm 50. You know, there's.
I don't know though, man. See, I don't know. So Zoltan was 21 when he started or whatever, and he got up just fucking talked like he's 50 years old. I don't know how he fucking did that.
My experience, like I said, like learning, like, oh, I thought I was well adjusted.
I don't have a crush on Zoltan, by the way, you guys. I know. I just keep bringing him up. So it's cool that you. It's cool that you do. That's why everyone calls you a faggot.
We love you, Zoltan. Right.
But I mean, I find that no, actually, that is an obstacle because. I was just talking with a comic that was staying with us over the weekend about this, is I tend to view life very black and white. You know, it's either red light, green light, good, bad. And that's something that I learned over adulthood. I think adulthood kind of forces you to look.
Well, in the jobs you've had.
In the jobs that I've had.
You know, it is very black and white.
It is very.
Or your histrionic borderline personality. But we can talk about that later.
All right. Yeah, we'll do another episode. You want to come back? We'll do another episode.
On the couch with Allison Gill. Right.
It's not that kind of couch.
But just trying to like train your brain kind of mentally to view the shades of gray and not view the black and white.
Yep.
And find the be able to understand other people's perspective and those different positions that they have within life and how to make them see your position and make your position palatable and your point of view palatable. That's been very difficult for me this first year.
I've just noticed that being old, I don't know who any of the comedians are. I did Hollywood Improv and Russell Peters. Mm-hmm. I just even didn't remember his name right now. Was going up after me. I thought it was like RJ's brother. I didn't know who the hell he was. I had no fucking clue. I was like, oh yeah, and he come up to me after my show and he's like, yeah, give good head, because you know, talking about my right. dick jokes in my set, and he's grabbed my butt. I'm like, stop, get the fuck away from me.
Russell Peters grabbed your butt?
Well, you know, he was flirting. Not in a way that I would hate like some other comedians have, but very nice guy, very friendly, flirty. I had no fucking clue who he was. And then like later on...
And Russell Peters makes lots and lots of money later, doing comedy.
2 weeks later, I'm flipping through HBO and it's like, Russell Peters, green card. And I'm like, oh, that nice fella got himself a show. And I turn it on, it's like 60,000 people. Right. And I'm like, who the fuck is this guy? So I Wikipedia this guy. He makes like $15 million a year doing comedy. I'm like, well, fuck me.
You're sitting at home looking for the headline that says, local boy makes good.
Yeah.
And he's selling out arenas all over the country.
Right. I'm like, oh, isn't that great? Yeah, so I don't know who anybody is. I don't have, I can't relate to the 18 to 35 crowd that comes to a show in pop culture. Or I'm at the age where I don't know who the Saturday Night Live host is or the music act. I'm there, you know, so I don't, right. I can't go back and forth on shit like that with the audience. So I think it actually, there's a lot of benefit of getting it in when you're young. It, well, first of all, you're going to have, by the time you're my age, you'll have 21 years of experience.
Yeah.
Whereas I only have six, but you've got that 18 to 35 demographic. You can relate to them better.
Mm-hmm.
I can't. I give them Werther's.
Like visiting grandmas.
Well, all right, guys. This has been a very quick hour.
It has. Absolutely. That went by fast.
Yeah. And once again, never really got around to talking food and beverage.
No. We learned surprisingly little about food and beverage.
Yeah,
in this podcast.
For a food and beverage podcast, we talk very little about food and beverage most of the time.
We had a beverage.
Yeah, we did have a beverage.
I went to Felipe's on Mother's Day.
You went to where?
Felipe's.
Oh yeah, how was it?
Crowded.
I never go anywhere on Mother's Day.
Yeah, it was a stupid idea.
That's our competition.
Being in this industry, not Mother's Day, not Valentine's Day. I hate going out on New Year's Eve.
I'm excited about your society thing in October.
Oh, that's gonna be great. The Five Chef Society is gonna be great, but that's a very controlled atmosphere as well. The best, actually, in the last decade, the best New Year's Eve I've had was here. This past New Year's.
That was a fun New Year's.
It was a great New Year's.
Yeah.
We had a really good show. We had a really good lineup. That one was probably the best time I've had in the last decade.
That was also the day that I found out that I was hired here. So that whole day, that day holds a special
place
for me.
Was it really?
Mm-hmm. I was told Christmas Eve that I got hired.
Yeah, I have noticed, though, that once I got out of the food and beverage hotel restaurant management industry, I was like, yeah, I'm finally going to have my weekends and my holidays.
Mm-hmm.
And F that, because I don't go out on those days.
Right.
Yeah.
And neither should you. It's
right.
Fucking terrible. People are horrible. It's better to work and make a shitload of money on those days. But not, you know, I don't have a job that affords me that anymore. So.
Yeah. So, Rob, where can we find you on social media?
Facebook, Rob Bronson.
You have Twitter?
Not at the moment.
Okay. Instagram?
I'm a little behind.
I had to twist his arm to get a Facebook.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I don't feel so old now.
Yeah. Well, Rob is antisocial, both in person and
that is true. For somebody who has a problem with the world, I wouldn't expect a whole flood of social media from you.
I'm surprised I have 80 friends right now. I didn't know I knew 80 people.
Allie, what about you?
AllisonGill.com, Instagram, The Allison Gill, Twitter, Allison Gill. That's one benefit about being old. My name was available when those social media came out. I got in there early. I'm also running to be an at-large delegate for Bernie Sanders for California. You can get information on my website about that.
Nice. Nice. What do you guys got coming up show-wise? And with a caveat that this won't air until not this Sunday, but the following Sunday. So talk about stuff that's after that.
May 21st.
Somewhere around there, yeah.
Yeah, this will air on May 22nd.
Yeah.
Yes.
So what do you guys have coming up?
June 2nd, I'm doing 3rd Street Live in Temecula. And then
have you been up there yet?
Not yet.
I hear it's a really good show.
Yeah, I've heard that's a really good show.
June 23rd, Madhouse.
You on that weekend?
Yeah, and then...
So am I.
Then July 22nd and 23rd, I just found out I'm headlining at the Comedy Spot in Scottsdale. So that should be
nice.
Fun. Yeah.
Nice. My goal is to work out of town sometime.
Mm.
I like to keep my goals realistic. It doesn't even have to be really far out of town. I'll go to El Centro.
I want to
work someplace other than San Diego.
They pay you, except L.A.
Right. Maddie, what you got coming up?
Oh, coming up, I, where are we at? This is May, not April. I have a...
He's a consummate professional, everyone.
Absolutely. So, May 22nd, I will be at the Up and Smoke show at the bar in La Mesa. And
the bar?
The like bar.
The one bar?
That's what its name. It's called The Bar in La Mesa.
It's very creative.
It's very creative. It's a very, you can feel it when you walk in. It's a creative place.
Up in Smoke, Stoner Show?
No. I think everybody does, but it's not like a, you know, everybody needs a card kind of thing and nobody's smoking weed. I think that's just kind of like how they market it. I don't know.
Hmm. Is it themed? Or are you going to tell weed jokes?
I hope not, because I don't have a lot. I have one.
Yeah.
But
I was like, how have you avoided weed jokes?
Because it's too easy. I don't know. I don't know.
No.
I don't think I have. I do have the story about teaching Sunday school while stoned, but I'm still working on that. That doesn't go on the book show.
The books.
Right. And May 30th, I will be on the Lights Out show at the Ken Club with Austin Train and his sketch comedy group.
Who puts that show together, Austin?
Austin, yes, Austin, and then I forget the other two. They do sketch comedy, and then they also have book comedians in between the sketches. Very cool show.
Is that a pretty new show? Or
running about a year and a half now, 2 years.
So they've just been avoiding me.
Yes,
okay.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
yep. Oh, yeah, and then one other one, but I'll probably mention it again, but June...
It's so funny you bring up new venues, like when you talk about a new girl at school and the guys are all, who? What's her name?
What?
Have
Is she pretty?
I haven't fucked her yet. I haven't fucked her yet. Why haven't I fucked her yet? That's like, you say, oh, that kind of Kenja. I'm like, what's that? What? Who?
Really? Huh? There's a new club?
What?
Do they have sound?
Do they have sound?
Ken Club is a cool club that's been around since like 1943 too, and you can totally feel. Anytime I'm there, I think to myself like, man, there were people like dancing the jitterbug and like falling in love in this place, and now it's just comics telling dick jokes. Like,
yeah, those are cool venues. My band used to play there. I've done comedy at the Casbah with Mike Showalter. That was probably one of the cooler shows.
That's pretty cool.
That I've done, except everyone's standing, so it's a little weird. 200 people standing. And you're like, start a pit or something. I don't know what to do.
And then June 10th, I will be on the weekend here at the Madhouse. So that I'm really looking forward to.
Sweet.
My calendar's pretty well wide open.
Oh.
I have a show that I'm doing next week after this airs. Oh, I have a show tonight, but you guys, this will be 2 weeks ago to you.
For our time machine audience.
Yeah, but I am here the same weekend with the lovely Allison Gill in June. That's actually going to be a great weekend. Paul Agata's headlining that weekend.
What? June?
23rd.
23rd?
That weekend?
At the Madhouse, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Is that, I'm just on one show then I must be. Or is the 23rd a Thursday? Is that Bijan?
Oh, 23rd's a Thursday?
Maybe.
Oh, okay. I'm not on that show with you. I am on that weekend.
Ah,
I'm
gotcha.
The 24th and the 25th.
But Thursday is Bijan's show.
That's
Comedy
what I'm
Throwdown,
doing.
Which you can check out. If you hit us up, we can get you free tickets to that show.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
And you can find us on Shot in a Beer Pod on Twitter.
You don't need to say that anymore. Our end bumper lets you know.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, I started.
Are we debuting the new bumper?
Actually, last week's episode had the new bumper.
Spectacular.
Yeah, so it's gonna be pretty
good.
Cool.
Well, you know how to find us. Allison and Rob, thank you so much for being on the podcast. And Maddie, let's go.
Last night I dreamt of flying over hillsides in the snow, and I drove down through the clouds to the valley there below. When the fields turned into parking lots, my freedom turned to dread. The ground rose up to greet me, and I jumped up out of bed. You can fly, fly, fly off to any way you choose. You can try, 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 but eventually you'll lose. It seems there's always something trying to bring a good man down. I have no fear of falling, but I hate it in the ground. I'm searching through my soul for trying to find some extra change. I thought that I knew everything till everything changed. Now I'm standing on an island that is singing into the sea, and all that I can do is just enjoy the scenery. Well, you can fly, fly, fly off to anywhere you choose. You can try, 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 but eventually you'll lose. And say, man, just before he drowns. I have no fear of falling, but I hate it in the ground. I have no fear of falling, but I hate it in the ground. Yeah.
You have been listening to Shot in a Beer. For information about the podcast, just search for Shot in a Beer on Facebook or find us on Twitter at Shot in a Beer Pod. Shot in a Beer is also a member of A Modern Professions family of podcasts. For other podcasts you might enjoy and information about live shows and how you can get involved, visit amodernprofession.com or check the network out on Twitter @amodernpro. Thank you for your continued support of Shot in a Beer.